Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name is Zach, and this week I'm joined by the regular crew. We've got Mark and Logan. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Ready to get back into some discussion. How are you doing, Logan?
I am doing all right, thank you. Zach, how's it going?
I'm doing very well. I'm ready to have a party, so to speak. I told myself I wasn't going to make that joke.
But then you just did. You just did it.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah, I know. Right. I'll probably get edited out. Or probably
not. I know you. Like, come on now.
Oh, you'll just add a laugh track to make it sound like it works.
Yeah, totally make it sound works, better than it actually
see,
is.
See the joke work. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it worked. People laughed, right?
See?
Oh, man. Well, today we're going to have a talk show episode for y'all, and today's theme is parties.
Party!
We're gonna have a party today.
There you go.
But we had a couple things on our mind regarding parties and party sizes, and maybe some different experiences we've had with some weird, wacky parties. But I don't think we'll beat around the bush too much. I think we'll just get into it. Anybody want to start off today's conversation?
Well, I'll refocus it a little bit just in that I think the initial inspirations were, how do you deal with, you know, a small party? And then we decided to kind of expand it from there, you know. So the standard, like, RPG party size, I feel like, is probably in the 3 or 4 player range. Generally speaking, you're expecting there to be three to four people that are on the player side, one, you know, narrator, GM, DM, whatever. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with it when you have one player or two? How do you deal with it when you have 7 or 8?
First question is, do you think that has changed over the years? Because it feels like, you know, back in the early days, you used to see, you know, modules written for 5 or 6. Or if you go to conventions, you see like 5 or 6 seems to be the norm. But it seems like player groups do seem to get down to smaller sizes and more
smaller,
modern games, too. You know, I'm thinking we recently played The One Ring. And I think it was interesting to look at, they have various positions for both traveling and for fighting. And if you look at kind of classic D&D, it seemed like you had a need for your fighter, your magic caster, your healer, your rogue. And, you know, this had, you know, smaller, like 3 or 4 focuses for your party, which seemed to kind of lend towards a smaller group.
But in other ways, I think, you know, talking about the One Ring RPG, it also kind of hindered very small parties, with our situation being 2.
Yeah.
Where in combat, we could not take a particular stance because we didn't have enough people in the forward stance.
Good point.
So it's kind of a weird balance. Because, yeah, it does seem to... With the traveling roles, there are only 4 of them or 5 of them or something.
Yeah.
And anyone else, I guess it does state in the rules more than one individual can be in the same role. Mm-hmm. So you can have 2 people that are hunters.
Sure.
You know, and that's kind of the way they balance that with a bigger party size.
Sure.
The thing that I really had an issue with was, kind of in combat, we kind of seemed underpowered because we didn't have a large party.
Hmm.
And a question I have is, what do you guys think about giving smaller parties, let's say like unique magical items or special abilities, to kind of buff them up a little bit because there's not a big party?
It can be fun, and that can be neat. As they level, though, those can start to unbalance things. And I actually prefer giving them more action slots than giving them more power with each action. So, like, in original D&D and AD&D times, it was not uncommon for somebody to run two or three characters, or, you know, if they had a large party, you know, to have a couple backups, because it was a bit more board gamey, and you are moving through and you need to have people who can cover each position. Now, I think running three players, you know, three characters for each player is kind of bulky, and you're definitely pulling yourself away from being able to feel like you're role playing. You're, you know, more of like a squad negotiation, squad tactics control. But having the option to just give a little bit more support with the, I'm gonna use the D&D concept of sidekick. Having somebody in there that's not as powerful as a regular player character, that's not the center, but does help out with something, whether that's some basic spell casting, being a meat shield, or maybe they have some sort of skills like picking a lock that the rest of the party doesn't. They're there to help with that. And specifically in D&D, and I think we definitely saw this with a little bit of combat we did in the One Ring, action economy matters. You can be, you know, awesome, powerful fighter, but if the other side has twice the amount of actions that you do, you're hosed. There's only so many attacks you can do in a round. There's only so many spells you can do. And if you're outclassed that way, even if they're all a bunch of little kobolds or a bunch of small goblins or something like that, you're going to die, you know, because they can out action you. They can overwhelm, which is, I mean, it's realistic, you know, one person standing against a bajillion is cool, but rare. You know, it's not very common for that to actually work in a real, quote unquote, real situation. So, you know, the fact that you can be equalized by having to deal with a swarm is interesting. So more commonly, if I can help a small party by giving them someone to help that they, you know, control actions in a combat or in a conflict situation, but maybe their personality is still controlled by the GM, you know, their opinions on things, then, you know, that allows the players to have a little bit more support and not be overwhelmed by too many people, but also still focus on their character as their situation and not be distracted from what they want to play as.
I ran into this a lot with playing Star Trek too, because that's a situation where you have a whole ship full of people at your disposal, but if not everybody is playing, you know, if you're only a couple people are playing, you might not have the full complement that you might need.
Right.
And that's a game that relies very heavily on having all the members of the team that are good at the things that they do.
Sure. So when I used to run the old FASA, I kind of did that where, you know, everybody would have another character just to kind of fill out the crew, and you would have all the basics covered. The new Modiphius Star Trek does closer to what Logan was just talking about. They create supporting characters. So you have you have your main character, but then you have a supporting character who helps fill out that
hashtag red shirts.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a nice way of keeping the focus on the main player characters, but having that full party or full ship complement feel.
And that's not something that I think of that much. Yeah, you know, I think of NPCs helping characters during during a story, during a scenario, or whatever.
Right.
I think it's a really good way to go, because you're going to not always be creating NPCs as the narrator. So if you can allow someone else in the party, or allow the players to kind of help with some of who they see and what things they want to see from that, it takes a little bit of weight off the narrator, you know?
Sure.
Absolutely.
And Star Trek is a little bit of a unique situation too, because you have your landing party is going to be a few players. And if it's not, you know, if you don't need your engineer, then the engineer player gets to play something on that landing party without having to make up an excuse of why is the engineer going on this medical mission. Right. You know, he can jump in and play a nurse or something else.
An assistant science officer.
I think that's really cool if you are holding to a more military and crew focused sort of game. You know, you could see that same thing happening in 7C if you're playing, you know, for a military or a navy, I should say, of some kingdom, you know. Totally. Same sort of thing.
Yes.
Honestly, even us with our crew, you know,
it's possible.
Those are supporting characters that we helped create together.
Yeah. So, but in a situation like that, you have kind of a two, you know, the other side of that coin is if you do have a large group and you do have the full crew filled out with player characters, then you run into the challenge of trying to create stories that involve everybody. You know,
which is tough. Yeah. That, none of us have been that like really big party GMs, I don't believe, from what I've heard of.
Oh no, I've definitely run. I think the largest I've run is 12.
Oh,
yeah. I had a long run that was 9.
Do you prefer bigger parties though? Like you don't.
If the party is too small, that can be more difficult, in my opinion. For a large party, the only time it really works well, because you know, with a large party, you're constantly trying to scramble to keep everybody entertained, right? So somebody's not sitting there bored,
right?
If you have players that are self-starters and are going to act on their own and enjoy having conversations in character with other players and stuff like that, it can work actually really freaking well because they're kind of running themselves and that can be a crap load of fun. And you just throw in some, you know, grenades here and there just to shake up stuff and then let them do their thing. And you almost kind of just watch and add little tidbits and just it's neat. I've had a lot of fun with all player sizes. I've had some interesting moments with a one-on-one. That one is harder. I think one-on-one is one of the hardest just because it's often like used for introducing someone to a game and they feel like all the focus is on them and they get stuck very easy. But even having just one other person to bounce ideas off of really helps kind of open up problem solving, you know? I think my preferred is around 5 or 6. You get over 6 and you start to bog down too much. But if you're only like 3 players, you often, you know, kind of get stuck in one rut. And that 5 range, that 4 or 5 range, usually there's one dissenting opinion that can stir it up a little bit and and give a different perspective just enough to not, you know, get stuck in a rut. And you can start getting those webs like, okay, every player needs to know 2 other people. Well, if you have 3 players, that sucks. If you have 6, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, so because then that's not fair. Everybody knows everybody, but everybody has a connection some way or another. So,
true.
Yeah, it's a hard mix up. You know, it really depends on the group dynamic, the players. You know, I don't mind popping around and I can embrace, you know, kind of that ADHD jumping from one thing to another. That's part of why it's fun about running, you know, as a narrator, is because I don't have to get stuck with just one character. I can keep popping around with different things. Same thing with, you know, different things that are happening with the party. But if the party itself is very much, you know, entertain me sort of mindset and they're not self-starters, that's difficult. That doesn't work out so well.
Yeah. I think a lot of it depends too on the genre. You know, like you say, you know, Star Trek or ship, any kind of ship oriented thing or military. You know, having that big group really does help. Something like, what was that? The Masks. Masks is very much about that kind of relationships with, you know, everybody has a different relationship.
But,
and Masks, you know, if you've listened to many podcasts with Masks or seen stuff with that does great for constant fluctuating groups. Okay, we have all 6 of us here. Next week, we only have 2 of us. Cool. Well, this is a comic on just these 2 players, these 2 characters, these 2 heroes. Like,
that's a good point. But you know, as we all know, I like to lean towards espionage themed.
Yeah, that's really hard to do big.
That's hard to do. Yeah, that is something that you do want a small 2-player, 3 at the very most type of thing.
We've done 3 and it was fine with Cold Shadows.
Cold Shadows, I think, you know, that is kind of an exception. That's a little bit more, you know, there's a little bit more diversity in that game. but something like, you know, James Bond is very, very, you know,
for a pure Bondian sort of, you know, one hero feeling, you know, the one very smooth dude, very difficult. If you get into something that I'm thinking like old Spycraft, you know, from old D20 stuff, where it's more like a team and it's more like a special operations team.
Like an A-team situation, almost.
That can be better, but still, again, it's, you know, I feel
That became, then it became much more militaristic, it seemed like.
Yeah.
That was a lot more the strike team.
Well, or it's like, okay, cool, we got all these agents coming together for this one moment. Hard to keep that going outside of, you know, this one op. Like, why would we stay together after that? We wouldn't, you know?
Yes.
We'd go off and do our own thing.
But I think, you know, in general, anything that's more cinematic, I think, has a lot of that sort of, you know, I mean, if you think of cinema, it's very rare to see a large party in an action movie. It's usually, you know, lone heroes or buddy cops, you know, it's usually a small, there are exceptions, but, you know, it's quite often that small party type of feel, you know, you have that, you know, in that sort of situation, you do have the Conan beating down a whole horde of, of minions. Which, you know, yeah, it's not historically accurate, but that's that cinematic action flavor. Well,
and it has its moments. Like, it definitely works, you know?
Of course, yeah. It's and it's a very different, it's just a different flavor or feel.
I mean, even a great example where there is a huge party, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, that sort of stuff, that didn't last.
Right.
They did split out, and we had three different adventures going on. Because, you know, the party got busy and, you know, Steve couldn't make it on Tuesdays and, you know, whatever. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very true.
Yeah, it's weird to think about splitting the party because, you know, so many people say don't split the party. And a lot of people's mindset is, oh, well, we're all in this party. We're all going to be together in the same moments all the time. But realistically, I think it won't. Yeah, it won't last if you treat it that way.
I think you're better off knowing what the expectations are, and if everybody's okay with allowing spotlight to swap, then you can have that where people are separate and doing their own things and coming back together and going out and coming back together. You know.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, have either of you had any experience with multiple game masters with a large group of players?
Yeah.
How'd
like co-GM situation?
Yes. Specifically, I did it with a live action werewolf campaign where I was one of the storytellers, part of a storyteller team that would kind of split around. But, you know, that is an approach for, you know, having a big group and then splitting the party. What have you done, Logan?
It was also in a World of Darkness sort of thing. It was a mage game situation where, depending on the feel or the theme for the episode, you know, the GM would switch off basically every kind of like three or four sessions.
Okay.
Kind of like what we do with the rotating chairs here for the GM situation. But it was just two dudes doing that. And they were running it because one really liked to get into the conspiracy theory side of stuff and go more government agents that, you know, they were having to deal with, and the other much more like to get into the horror and, you know, unknown spooky things in the night side of it. And so both of those are big parts of a mage game and World of Darkness in general. And so being able to swap it off like that allowed them to focus on their strengths, but keep a narrative going that seemed believable for the rest of the party, with a mixture of mages. So done that. And then the other side of it is, you know, when somebody asks for that, I have been asked, you know, hey, would you co-GM with me? Mostly they just want me to GM. It's like, okay.
I haven't had any experience with it, but I would love to do it because, you know, working with somebody else to put a lot of people through a story sounds like a blast. I mean, and that's kind of what we do here. We all kind of work together to write our story.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's kind of the closest experience I've had with it.
That sounds like a great way, Logan was saying, to kind of emphasize some different parts of the world and bring that sort of thing in. I think it's also kind of handy, especially if you have multiple GMs, to split up NPCs
mm-hmm.
and, you know, give the NPCs more flavor, more distinction.
They definitely did that, you know, like even if the not on GM was a player at that time, you know, they're, it's not their time. If they had voiced that person previously and we wanted to talk with them, they would totally flop in and be that person, you know.
Nice. So, nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that works well too in a live action kind of situation where you are physically spread out.
Yeah.
You're not at the same table. Obviously, you want that kind of, you go over there and do that. You know, the Star Trek would be another example if you had one GM running the shipboard stuff while somebody else ran the landing party doing that.
You know, right.
That would be a good way of doing that sort of adventure.
I think one that I've wanted to do that I've never had a chance to do, which could totally incorporate multiple GMs, is to have multiple parties that affect each other on the things they're doing. And then like once every 12 sessions or once a year or once every, you know, couple of months or whatever, everybody comes together. And so you've got like four different parties of four or five, and then they all just come together and this is the shit that happened. And this is, you know, how you affected my group and whatever else not. And now we can move forward on this one.
Man, that'd be great with like a Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire game or something big like that. Man, I'm telling you, I've always wanted to do that with something like Paranoia, where like everybody's in a different sector. And then every once in a while, you know, paths cross.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be really fun to do.
It'd be fun, yeah.
Definitely.
Here's a question I have with the bigger party sizes. How do you balance it enough if everybody is together in a scene or a combat? How do you, other than just like putting more monsters in there, how do you make it feel good? Because there's just a lot of people hacking and slashing without making it seem like just mass combat.
Well, it really depends, I guess, on the system you're playing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because, like, 7C, I'm going to cause more consequences and more things that are happening. And, you know, it's not just one princess being stolen.
Same.
It's the princess and multiple children that are being stolen from, you know, the king. The king is currently fighting and is outmatched. You can tell he's about to be overwhelmed against the villain, and the place is on fire. Oh yeah, and you know that somebody's you know, got a detonation device they stole from the Invisible College in the basement. Who's going where?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just amp it up, but it doesn't always have to be more dudes. You know, okay, you're fighting three goblins, now it's 30 goblins. Like, nah, that's boring. Like, make it trend not just more chaos and more things, but what things are more interesting to each of the players and what they've chosen. If you have that person who's more of a technician, they're going to go deal with the bomb. And you've got that person who's a fighter, they're going to go up and try and save the king. And you've got that, you know, that orphan that can move fast, kind of rogue sort of thing. And they're like, no, I won't let anybody else become an orphan. Like, you've got things they're going to peg off of those characters, hopefully, and inspire them and make them interested.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of the key. It's kind of like that old, how do you eat an elephant joke, you know, it's like one bite at a time. but that's really kind of the same situation. It's like you have a spotlight. You have to have a spotlight. You know, you have to create a focus, and you have to move that focus around.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you know, everybody has to kind of be aware that right now we're focusing on the orphan character, and in just a few seconds it'll cut over to somebody else, and then it'll go to somebody else, and everyone will have their moment. And you just have to make sure that spotlight keeps swinging around, and that's how you get everybody involved. And hopefully, you know, kind of the point of all of this is we're entertaining each other. So if I'm waiting my turn, I'm sitting there enjoying watching the two of you have your moment together. Right.
It is both frustrating and bemusing when somebody's like, and it comes to their turn, like, oh crap, I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm going to do. Give me a second, because they're so lost in the moment. Like, I love that, but it's also like, bro.
Yeah,
there's that very clear difference between I was on my phone and I wasn't paying attention, and I was so into this story that was just happening, my brain broke.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
I was gonna say I've said that several times as we're telling stories. You know, the Logan's last GM sessions.
Yeah,
where I was just sitting and just like watching this Andrea's Electo shit going on, and I'm like, all right, I'm here. Where's the popcorn? Just I'm sitting in it and just watching or listening and just enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, especially if you have a big group, you got to hope that everybody is going to be into that. And everybody is going to be kind of the cheerleaders for everybody else, too, and enjoying their moments and letting them have their spotlights. And, you know, that's what makes it work.
Not to steal a friend's story, but a good friend of mine got me into 7th Sea was running the Freiburg City way back, you know, from the first edition stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he had a party of like 11 or 12 or something like that. But it was literally like, okay, here are some things happening. And then like people just played off each other. And he just sat there and was like, cool, this changes that. Okay, great. And just like let them do their own thing. And they just literally were playing off of role playing off of each other. And hey, we want to go do this. And we're going to go to the library. We're going to go over here and see this person. And and he just was kind of the traffic director. But like it just happened around him, you know, and he says that was one of his best times, you know, running a game. And he didn't really run that much. Like he just kind of let them run themselves, you know.
I can see that working really well. Yeah.
7th Sea is a good system to balance for party size because, like you said, there are so many other things that you can throw in there that's not just more enemies. There are those consequences and opportunities and stuff like that that can really, you can really narrow down what a player character is good at by throwing in stuff that they're good at.
Well, and that's something to think about for any game too, you know. That doesn't have to be only in 7th Sea, you know. Part of what makes combat boring is when you feel like you have to slog through these enemies before you can go do the other objective. What if the other objective, you know, stop the ritual, disarm the bomb, save the kid, whatever else not, is happening concurrently? So your jock characters can go beat some faces and your less combat focused characters can go do the less combat-y things, and you still have it based on rounds and everybody's, you know, okay, so it's your turn. Great. Now you're going to try and disarm that thing. Okay, let's make that roll. Let's see how it goes. Oh, you got it, but there was a conflict with that. It sparked. You take some damage. Cool. You know, like next person. Okay, you're going to smack the baddie. Like keep the action moving like an action scene in a movie. Mm-hmm. Let that chaos swirl around and just embrace the chaos a little bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the larger parties work best in stuff that's less combat-y. You know, if you have the ball that everybody's kind of infiltrating and trying to meeting NPCs and scoping out the place, and you know, that's a heavy role play situation. Everybody can play off each other. They can do their own things with the spotlight or whatever. And that sometimes works so much better than just a big brawl.
Yep.
Yeah. Half of the party gets trapped on the inside of a booby trap puzzle room while the other is stuck outside the door having to fight bad guys that are infiltrating, trying to get to the same place that you are.
Yeah. Or trying to communicate with each other and finding different ways of working together.
I mean, think about that like that, too. Like, you can have different puzzles happening at the same time, too. And you have to work them at the same time. You have to be able to coordinate together. You know, if you're in an online game sort of situation, maybe you've got little separate chat rooms and you just pop between them. Okay, so this is what's happening with you guys now. And then, you know,
Yeah.
You guys think about that. I'll come back and, you know, just jump around and you keep them literally separated.
Man, that's cool. That's great. It's given me so many ideas. My brain's just filling with thoughts right now.
That is the hope. Fill up the brains.
Yep.
I need it, Logan. I need it.
Yeah.
Now we got to go out and find more players to use these ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know a couple of them, so we'll reach out. Mark, something you had said, I don't know if you said it before or after we started recording, you were talking about campaigns with alternating groups.
Oh, yeah. Specifically, I was kind of talking about, well, Logan, you kind of mentioned masks as a great one for just kind of just playing with whoever's there at the time.
Yeah, anything that's more episodic like that.
Sure. But compared to like something like Star Trek, where if your doctor isn't there that week and you have a medical oriented adventure, that's a challenge. That gets kind of ugly and is much more difficult to handle than, you know, that. And we're kind of coming into the holiday season and we're our groups have a lot of conflict.
Yep, that's for sure.
And it's going to be more and more of that. You know, person C can't make it this week, and
right.
person B can't make it the next week. And, you know, how do you deal with that sort of, you know, you have a big group, but then you only have two people this week, and you have a game that you're expecting a lot of people. Obviously, one of the great suggestions, as Logan mentioned, is finding a game that works well with that sort of thing. But are there any other tricks or ideas for that sort of thing?
My brain jumps to flashback episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So taking a moment and going back to a time when, you know, maybe either before the adventure started, or what if these are two people that knew each other before, or maybe going back and taking a deeper dive into an adventure that you all had, but then, you know, maybe there's a part of time that we didn't get to tell the story and that main part of the adventure, and we're getting to go back and really take a look at this scene, and just with a smaller group of people, and just going.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I really like having a flashback episode for like a party start, you know, because sometimes it's you just want to get into playing and trying to do the whole like awkward, how did we meet? Oh, let's meet at a tavern. Like, I just think it's very old. So I just want to be like, okay, you all know each other. Let's go. And so it's neat later on to go, okay, how did you actually meet? What were the moments? And just have something flickering back and forth between those, which is very cool. I think another technique, which is more forethought, and you might have to incorporate this technique if you know your party, your players are less dependable, or, you know, more busy or whatever else not, is trying to make whatever game you're playing more episodic.
Yeah.
And not leave yourself in the middle of a moment, which takes some forethought. It takes planning to try and stop things at certain times. You know, if you try and get yourself on a schedule while you're playing, okay, we're going to go for 2 hours. We're going to take a 15-minute break. We're going to go for another hour and a half. We're going to wrap it up. And that's 4 hours. Boom, we're done, you know, sort of thing. And try and do that all the time when you're in the good moments. It's easier to start feeling a pacing with the stuff you're presenting and how your players are reacting to it, to know when you need to stop something. And sometimes it's better to stop 10 minutes early.
Yeah.
So you're not in the middle of something that's going to trip you up later on. It's very easy to move on from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true. Yeah. Like the episode ends, and it's, you really have to know your players at the table and how they react to the things that you give them when you play, because you can go in and go, okay, I want to play for 4 hours, but then they get through like half of it in that 4 hours because that's the kind of players they are.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, we've taken our time with some things sometimes. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's hard. You know your people, and that communication is helpful too. You know, sometimes just being direct about it is helpful. I think John Wick talks about this often, you know, don't be subtle. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just being bro, that is nothing. Like, just move on.
Right.
Exactly.
It's true.
And honestly, we do it too a little bit, like when we write our stories, we go, okay, I have in mind that this will probably take 4 sessions, and then, you know, we kind of have an idea later. Of 12 sessions. But we do better sometimes than others. We're more accurate on our guesses, but
true.
But yeah, depending on the actual content itself, if you can get through it in that amount of time, yeah, absolutely. Plan for it.
Yeah.
And make that an episode.
Yeah, I was thinking of Blades in the Dark as a game that each session, one heist, whoever's there for it plays, and then, you know, the next heist could be a totally different part of the same crew, but totally different group of people within that crew do something. So
yeah, I think Blades in the Dark is great for that episodic, you know, or it's a great as a fill-in. If you got your main campaign, you know, you're going to have some time with, you know, without everybody there, maybe you switch to a Blades game for a little bit, you know?
Yeah, having that other backup sort of game can be a way to keep something going on, at least.
Yeah, that's true. I think my experience, now we're switching a little bit on the topic here, but if you can keep a schedule, it's easier to make sure things are consistent. So, okay, we can't meet every week because something always comes up. Well, I'm going to make sure we meet every week. Now, it might only be role play every other time, and then a board game, you know, the times between. But just keeping everybody used to that schedule as opposed to, you know, once a month or twice a month or whatever else not, where it's really hard to remember, oh, wait, is it this week? Is it next week? I don't know. No, it's Wednesday nights. We always do this or whatever.
That's a good point.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe you're doing character creation for a game that you all want to start playing or something else, you know.
And if you pop around too much, people get distracted, but you do want to keep people engaged. So, you know, talking about different things or something. Yeah, exactly. Prepping for stuff.
Good point.
All right. So we've talked a lot about how do you deal with a bigger size or how to deal with a smaller size. What's your ideal party size and why? You know, I know it changes per game or whatever else not, but like, What's your thing? I think I talked about that a little bit earlier, you know, that five players is fun, you know, because you can play off each other and but not be too bulky. What is your preferred group dynamic? You know, what do you prefer to be?
Yeah, I actually tend to prefer smaller. I think probably, you know, like I say, partly because of the games I'm used to running. And, you know, a lot of my experience have been, you know, 2-3 players.
The master of solo games prefers.
Yeah, exactly.
Parties. And the master. Yeah. Okay. No, sure. No players. He needs no one.
Yeah, big surprise there. But no, having a couple people play off each other is a huge bonus. And if you have three, that kind of helps keep a little bit of diversity there, so you're not just talking to the same person the whole time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I kind of like that kind of intimate. Three people, you know, everybody gets a spotlight a little bit more type of flavor. And like I say, I also tend to lean towards very cinematic things. So small group against a horde, you know, is the kind
that's
of
so fun though.
Right.
Yeah. That kind of has kind of an epic flavor that I enjoy. So,
I mean, you can play a Star Wars game with a whole, you know, huge slew of people, and you've got your you know, Han and Chewie and a couple of droids and, you know, this, you know, young farm boy and Leia and, you know, all these people on this one ship, and they're trying to just figure this out and stop this thing. And then you can also just play the whole, like, Jedi and Padawan.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's it.
Exactly.
Now, there's two thoughts that are in my head here on the difference between ideal.
Yeah, that's fair.
How many people do I want to run the game for, or how many people do I want to manage, host at my house, and we get food for on session
night? Hey, if you're running the game, they can bring something, you know what I'm saying? Just
right, no, exactly. Rules, yeah, that's
yeah,
that's just preparation and planning right there.
Yep. And that's a big part of it too, is, you know, yeah, if you have five good players, fantastic. You know, awesome. But if you have three players and two, we can weed those out and play with three people. You know what I mean? That's
right.
That's part of the math.
You end up playing with three people.
Yeah.
Honestly, the more I think about when I did the convention gaming, I like the 6-man party.
Mm.
It was a lot of fun to manage with a story and have a bunch of different things going on and just letting them go wild and crazy because it's a slightly bigger party. But I have more experience with the smaller party.
Yeah.
Like you, Mark.
Yeah, I had it was intimidating to look at 6 people across the table, definitely. But
with our 5 years of experience running a game with two other people for the most part. So
right.
I think that's a big difference too, is, you know, what's the group you're dealing with? Do you want to, what do you want for a one-off, a, you know, a convention game? I was gonna say studio game, but convention game. And what do you want with a regular recurring every, you know, week for, you know, a year game? Dealing
campaign,
with
a long running campaign.
You know, 8 faces for a long running campaign is very different than, yeah, I want 8 people for this convention game because I need people to play off and, you know, cause some chaos for me. Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah.
But before, I would have probably said 5 is my max. But yeah, but running that convention game, I would probably raise that to 6 is my max. Mm. And my comfort level, I think, is 3. Just because that's what I'm the most used to running for, you know, 2 or 3 people, 3 people more recently here. Thank you, Zoe, for joining us on our adventures here.
Yeah.
But I like that solid 3 because it's a good amount of people that ideas can bounce around, and people can still kind of split up, or one person can split off and do something.
And die.
when you all are still feeling like a group.
Yeah.
Because it's like, two doesn't feel like a party. Like, just thinking of it, and like you say a party of people, you don't usually think of two people.
Two is a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's a, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Two can be bigger enough, you know, but yeah, I agree. Two is hard because, yeah, you very much, they're just playing off each other, and then they'll always have each other's back, and you're not saying you want to, you know, foster strife between people in a group, but there is, you kind of almost come to expect what's going to happen. Like, there's not much that's going to change or be a surprise in that.
Yeah. And another aspect of, you know, Logan, you were talking about a regular gaming group. Having a slightly larger party or group gives you some flexibility. If one person can't make it, you still have a pretty solid group to game with, as long as you can work around it. You know, if you only have, you know, two or three, one person's gone, that's a pretty significant impact.
Yeah, game night's exactly. Canceled. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And that's the struggle too, because sometimes you have a majority of your large party that can't make it, and then unfortunately, yeah, you might have to cancel or just have a couple people over to hang out and play some board games or whatever.
Yeah. But it's more likely that you can work around one person in a large party as opposed to one person in a small party
losing. Mm. Okay, so here's a question for you all. Hmm. Let's think of hypothetical situation. Hmm. You all are going out of your comfort zone and doing either the more large party or the really small party. Hmm. But what game would you run? And what's your thoughts behind that?
That's very easy.
Yeah.
What do they want to play? What do they want to play?
That's fair. Mm-hmm. What would you want to? That's what I'm saying. What would you want to run because it's either a smaller or a bigger party?
Did I stutter? I mean, seriously.
I need content, Logan.
It's a huge thing, you know. The last time I ran a solo. Actually, the last two times I ran solo, it was D&D, because they had specific things they wanted to see. They had a character in a different game they wanted to see more with, or they wanted to explore the system, and they didn't really have anybody else around. And so one was a ranger and one was a druid, you know, and they were just doing their very own thing. And it was very cool that they enjoyed just, you know, exploring and trying to think through each situation. They were always outnumbered, and they still made it, still worked, you know. So it really comes down to, what do they want to play? Because the biggest thing I'm going to fight is player buy-in. I might think something is interesting, you know, or this setting or this theme or whatever else not, but if that's not what they want to play, I don't care what that group is, you know, like, it doesn't matter the size.
That's fair.
If they're not interested, you're done. So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Mark, what you got?
Well, for me, I have the two extremes. I do not like playing Star Trek with a small group for that. You kind of need you want a healthy crew complement, and then you have James Bond. I'm not going to play that with more than two people, because that's that world, that's that universe's that feel. So those are, you know, if I had a group that was saying introduce me to role playing, either a large group or a small group, those would be my two go to. And they have been my two go-tos in the past. So yeah. Those are kind of the two that I would lean towards, the two extremes.
That's a good, for my small group. Yeah, it could work with one, but I think two to three is a nice magic number, but I would go Tales from the Loop for a small group.
Okay.
Just because I think that game in particular, just because of the style of it and everything, it does lend for that smaller group, whereas something like Kids on Bikes might lend for a little bigger, like more Stranger Things-esque size group. And then on the bigger side of things, Yeah, it's hard not to say something like Star Trek.
Yeah.
But I also think Seventh Sea does very well with a large number of people.
Yeah.
I would probably be most comfortable running a large group through Seventh Sea. Just because it is so easy to separate people.
Well, and I think one of the nice things with 7C is the actual system is pretty straightforward. It's not a lot of complexity that you have to explain. You know, your character is going to be doing stuff this way, but your character is going to be doing stuff a different way, and your character is doing stuff a third way. It's pretty. You're rolling raises and using those raises to tell your story. So
that, yeah, very true.
That's a nice bonus for that sort of thing.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other side of it too. You know, we're all veteran, you know, narrators. If you've never run anything and you're just starting to play and you just pick up a system, that one, that's what you're running. Like,
yeah,
run the thing you're comfortable with, because that's whatever the other part of it. A big part of, you know, player buy-in. Some people don't have opinions is, how confident do you feel with what you're running? If you love the game, you're going to pull people in way more than if you don't. I was like, Mark, absolutely. I need you to go run a D&D game for us. it's not going to work well, because that's not a buy-in that Mark has. He's not there for it, you know? And that's part of it. You know, group consent works both directions. You all got to be
interested. I would send Logan on that trip.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. And you know, I know everybody talks about, you know, wow, this game is the best thing ever, or this game sucks, or this game. 90% of any role playing experience, you're not even using the rules.
No.
They come into play such a small fraction. How many 7C games have we had where we've never touched the dice?
Yep. Yeah.
You know? So yeah, do what you want, and you know, a good GM is going to make a great game, you know, as long as they have that buy-in, like you say. So
yeah, you can have an amazing game in D&D that feels so narrative, because that's what everybody in the group wants to do, and that's what the game master wants to do, and you can have the most boring, I don't know what the hell's going on slog in 7C because somebody, again, doesn't know what they're doing, and you know, doesn't quite get what's happening. Like, you know, it's huge having enough proficiency and also interest.
Yep, exactly.
There's the other third side of that coin. That's just the random. Weird. No one knows what they're doing, and everyone still has a great time.
That's most of the time.
That's what we all hope for.
Sometimes that's the majority of the time. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Well, gents, anything else before we wrap things up and probably go play a game or something?
I think that was a nice, short, sweet to focus on something fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's different ways to manage each situation, you know? Mm-hmm. Just get creative with it. This is a hobby. It's a game. You don't have to, like, be an expert. Just go do stuff. Make a mess.
I want to run more big games.
Well, get us some guest players.
Yeah, Zach. we gotta find people. I need friends.
I know.
All right, you guys. I'll see you next week.
All right.